I'll introduce myself. I'm Emily White, and I'm a psychologist, and I've taught in Minneapolis University Extension for Continuing Education for Women. I'm the psychologist C.G. Jung, and the topic is dreams, Jung and you, which Tom Alstrom dreamt up. Not literally, but thought of. And I will try to tell you why it is important to keep track of dreams, not just for curiosity, but as a real purpose. And so, first of all, I want to ask you how many of you remember your dreams at all?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Has anyone actually kept track of their dreams systematically? No. Okay. As you know, everybody dreams every night, and some dreams are more important than others, and some dreams are just little wisps. Some analysts say they can make anything out of any dream, but there's no doubt that there are some dreams that really shake you and stay with you, and I'll try to show you how you can recognize which dreams are more important and why it is important to keep track of them. And I'd like to say something about who Jung was, Carl Jung, and I'll give you a little sketch of his life. And I'll tell you a little about the types of dreams there are. So, first of all, why should we study dreams in the first place? I mean, it's only a dream, it's only a figment of your imagination, it's something that doesn't have anything to do with the real world and best forgotten. Well, very famous mathematicians have dreamt of the solution. They worked on it day and night, and they dreamt of the solution. The solution to a mathematical problem. And Constantine dreamt of the sign in the sky, which converted him to Christianity. And Jung himself wrote this book, which is your text, on the basis of having had a dream, Man and His Symbols. He was asked to write a book for popular consumption, and he'd written over 50 books, highly theoretical, very difficult to read, because he is a Swiss, and he writes English and German in a very dense way, but what he says is very substantial. But still, it wasn't for popular reading, and so somebody approached him and said, won't you write a book, a popular book? And he said, oh, no, no. Then he dreamt that he was giving a lecture and that he was talking to ordinary workers, and applauded him very much, and he took this as a sign that he should go ahead and write this dream. And he was in his late 70s when he wrote this book. He died about 80, when he was 84. So Man and His Symbols is a work that he did in response to the bidding of one of his dreams, see? So the dream can be a guide above all. The dream can be a guide if you know how to interpret it, and if you write them down and follow them. The more dreams you write down, the more you have to go by. And the more dreams you write down, the more you can tell which ones are important to you, or what they're saying to you, what the message is. They act like a mirror to the unconscious. And I've drawn a diagram on the board, and I don't know if you can see it, but I'll explain it. If you think of the whole self inside here, like a huge circle or an egg, only one little part up here is conscious, the part that you think with and in your daily life. Most of it is unconscious, and that can't be known except through dreams. And the ego is a little part of it. That's what we, you know, not that's the persona, the self that you are when somebody says, who are you? You give your name and occupation and so forth. That's just a very small part that mediates between the unconscious. It also receives messages from the unconscious. So the conscious and the unconscious balance each other, and I will tell you more about that too. This is the part that you direct your daily life with. But like the ocean, and I've drawn these little waves, there's a vast area of the unconscious. And I often use the analogy of an iceberg. 4/5 is underwater. And so if you just try to direct your life by the conscious part, it's only the top portion of the iceberg. Most of yourself is underwater, so to speak, or unconscious. And the only way that you can know about this unconscious which is really important because it contains all the wisdom of all the ages, among other things, is to look at your dreams, because in the dreams, symbols come up from the unconscious, and you can interpret them with your conscious mind. And if you know enough and are interested enough, they can become a guide, and a very good guide, because they will even be a warning to you if you're overdoing it in one direction or another. Just like your body, when you are sick, makes you lie down in bed and rest and balance itself out, so the psyche or the self balances itself out, so that the conscious and the unconscious are always in a balance, back and forth. And the function of dreams is to balance your conscious mind, or to complement it, so that when you look at your dreams, you're seeing that other part of yourself that you're not able to see any other way, and that you need for wholeness. Now, the contribution that Carl Jung made to psychology was to say that the purpose of life, really, is to become whole, or to become integrated. And integrated meant to integrate your unconscious into your conscious life, little by little, as you go through life. So that the purpose and the reason for keeping track of your dreams is to understand what's going on in this sea of the unconscious, and to get to know yourself better, to become more integrated, and to become a whole person. Jung and Freud were collaborators for about 6 years, and all of you have heard that Freud has said that dreams are fulfillments of a wish, something repressed that you don't really want to acknowledge. Jung accepted this up to a point, but he would not accept the fact that all dreams are sexual, and that all symbols are either phallic or feminine, that they're fixed. He would say, dream symbols are not always fixed. They belong to you. Whatever you dream of has to fit for you. It's not a fixed symbol. There are a few symbols that are fixed. There are a few images. And after a little while, I'll give you examples of what kinds of symbols there are. Most of all, the symbols that rise out of your unconscious are the kind that you read about in fairy tales, in myths, that we find in the Bible, or the dreams in the Bible. Especially the dream of Jacob's ladder is one of those archetypal dreams that literally ties the unconscious and the conscious together. You could almost say that Jacob was a symbol of this, of the self or the ego going between the unconscious and the conscious, if you want to bring it into psychological terms. All the Bibles in the dream, as you know, are very important. What are they? Their function is really to guide them, guide the person. And when Joseph dreams, he is guided to go to Egypt to escape Herod, and many other instances, so that I think the Bible gives us evidence as to why it is important to pay attention to dreams. We often hear that the angel spoke directly to him in a dream. Well, the angel would be the voice of God speaking through the unconscious. But the most important thing to realize is that you have in your unconscious all the answers to a problem, which is another beautiful thing. The psyche is not only self-regulating, but it contains the answer. So sometimes when you are perplexed and you pay attention to your dreams, you may find the answer in your dream. So I've thrown so much theory out, so maybe I should get down to the practical thing about how do you remember your dreams? Because everybody dreams every night, not just once, but many times. And there were studies made that when you go to sleep, about, I don't know how long after you go to sleep, but there's a point at which you dream, and when they wake the person, they remember their dream. Then you go into a deep dreamless state, and then you come back up. You almost wake up, you dream again, and Freud said maybe dreams keep you asleep. Well, I don't know, but they're certainly good entertainment, if nothing else. So they're very bizarre. The more bizarre they are, the more significant. The more they're tied in with yesterday's things, probably the less significant. And so what you need to do is to have a little piece of paper, any old piece of paper will do, and a pencil, preferably sharpened. It's nothing worse than trying to write your dream with an unsharpened pencil. So anyhow, and as soon as you wake up, again, preferably before the alarm. Alarm will just throw the dream out completely. But if not, just let the alarm turn it off and then close your eyes again and let the images come back. So that means you have to set your alarm like 10 minutes before you really have to get up, or 5 minutes. And if you want to remember your dream, you will, after a while. And then they will sort of float back, and suddenly the whole dream will be there. Now, I've done this for how many years? 20 years almost. So I know what I speak of. Some dreams I can't capture, but most of them come back, and they're there. And so then you write them down. Just write them as it comes to you. It doesn't matter. And if something happened earlier and you write it later, it doesn't matter. There is no time in dreams. What happens first and afterwards doesn't matter. Just so you get all the images, and especially anything that is visual, anything that is round or square or a number or a name, those things are really important. So write down the dream, let it sit there, and just forget about it. Now get up and do your day's work. Then reread it perhaps in the evening or 2 days later or 10 years later, who cares? And as you reread it then, you will see something jumping out at you, and you'll say, well, why did I dream about this? I'll give you an example in a minute. And suddenly it may make a lot of sense, because you remember something that happened before with which it ties in, or it leads you to think about something or somebody you haven't thought about in a long time, and that leads you to something else. And as you read and as you study, and as I'll tell you some symbols, you'll say, aha, I dreamt of water. Now, water is a universal symbol of the unconscious. And if you're, for instance, sailing in a boat on the water, that's a really beautiful image, because you're sailing on your unconscious. If you're flying, you're up in the air, you're reaching to higher things. If you're very anxious, you might dream of fire or explosions or floods. It has to fit for you, however. And if, for instance, you dream a dream over and over again. I was talking with a lady up there. She said she kept dreaming about being very busy and having to do certain things. And then in the morning, or missing a train, you know, and then waking up in the morning with great relief that the train had not gone, or she had not missed her train or plane. So this would be some anxiety about catching a train, which is very normal, and a kind of dream that everybody dreams. In fact, there's nothing abnormal about dreaming, but we're always afraid that the dream will reveal something special. Yes, it does. It reveals something that you're not conscious of, but it's not abnormal. It's bizarre. It's different. And if you dream a dream over and over again, it usually means that there's something you're supposed to be listening to. To give you a very specific example, many years ago when I was in college and lots of exams, I dreamt of swimming upstream against the stream, and I was having such a tough time. Well, after I passed my exams, that dream just vanished, because I had passed over that stage in my life, and I no longer was swimming against the stream. In fact, I had a lot of beautiful dreams of floating with the stream, downstream, in warm water. Another example was that I woke up one morning and I wrote down a dream, and at the very end there was a reference to a person I hadn't seen in, 10 years or something else. Why did I dream about this person? So I wrote it down. So I'm dutiful and compulsive, and I wrote it down. Sure enough, the next day I came across her name and I met her, and we got to talking and we reminisced. Now, is that a prophetic dream? I don't know. We call it anticipatory dreams. The dream can anticipate things that happen, or events will happen together in a meaningful way, and then they jolt you. So then I went back to the dream and looked at all the rest of it, and sure enough, it was one of the most meaningful dreams I've ever had in my whole life. Now, this was just a little appendage that jolted me to pay attention to the dream, you see. So there are many ways that you get jolted. Either the dream is really bizarre and you say, why did I dream that? Or you dream about somebody you haven't seen in a long, long time. That might be a sign to you, why not look at the rest of the dream, see what it means. And another way to look at the dream is that if you know the person in your dream, the chances are you're really dreaming about them. And especially if it is something you all did the night before, like we saw La Strada, and the next day I dreamt, that's a movie, and I dreamt about the movie, and I dreamt about the ending, only I rewrote the ending in my dream. Well, I said, well, that's just yesterday's movie, and it wasn't too important. I was just out there. But there are other dreams where I dream of people I don't know, or a king and a queen in some fairyland. It reads like a fairy story, and dreams are like fairy stories. And those dreams are important, and they are not about something out there, but about yourself inside, about parts of yourself. And they show up the conflict, they show up where you're going, they show up what you're afraid of, they show up what you're wishing for. And so all aspects of yourself are in there. In the following sessions, I'll use some of the other terms that Jung uses to describe parts of yourself. I'll just mention one right now. He talks about the shadow or the dark side that we have in ourselves. And everybody has a shadow and everybody has a side that they don't want to acknowledge. And you often dream of the shadow who is shown in a dream as a dark person or unknown person of your same sex. In other words, a shadow is usually a man in a man's dream and a woman in a woman's dream. You often dream of people who are old and wise, and we call them the old wise man or the old wise woman. And they can be people in authority, or they can be magicians, or they could be priests or ministers, teachers. And they often have a message. And that's, again, when you dream of somebody like that and they speak to you, and sometimes they even speak in a foreign language. That's quite funny. People who don't know languages can sometimes dream in foreign languages, and sometimes they make puns on names. And so, wish I had a good example right now. But dreamers, the dream will make puns using a name. Oh, yes. Somebody adopted the right children, and this was written W-R-I-G-H-T. Well, it was really the right children, the correct children, you see. Anyhow, that interpretation fit for that person. And there are many other examples where a name will really lead to something else. Colors are important. Numbers are important. And the movement is important. According to Jung, if you're going down the stairs, you're going down into your unconscious. And when he and Freud were on a boat going to America, they were analyzing each other's dreams. And Freud had a dream of going down into the unconscious. Was it Freud or Jung, Tim? Forget this now. I think it was Jung. Jung was dreaming of going down into the unconscious. Yeah. And he saw many, many strange things. Ancient, it was an archaeological dig. And he interpreted this as the unconscious symbols that he later wrote about that exist, the archetypes that he found. Well, Jung wanted to interpret it in terms of sexual things because there were lots of towers and domes, you see, male and female, and Jung felt he wanted to go further than that, so that was one basis of why they could not agree. And then Freud told him a dream, told Jung a dream, and Freud's dream was very personal, and Jung asked for a few associations, and Freud pulled back and said, no, that would diminish my authority. And Jung felt, well, if he can't tell a colleague what this dream means, we really can't communicate. And so that was the beginning of their break. You see, when you're on an equal level, and since both of them were interested in dreams, the fact that Freud wouldn't give him all the information, he said, well, then I can't analyze your dream, you see. It's nothing incriminating, but because for Freud everything had a sexual reference, I suppose he felt that he had to hold back. Nevertheless, in all his life, Jung had great respect for Freud and always credited him with doing the groundwork in this great field. And so Freud and Jung broke over this interpretation of a dream. And when you go to talk to an analyst or a counselor and you tell him your dreams, it helps him a lot to understand what you are, but he wouldn't tell someone else. He has professional ethics where he doesn't go around telling other people all about you or what you dreamt. And if when you want to share dreams, you don't want to bring it up in public, we could talk about it, make a special appointment, because not everybody wants to share it. On the other hand, it is fun to see how different people dream, and I'm hoping that after stirring you up and stirring your unconscious up, that everybody will go home and tonight have fantastic dreams. When I was here last time, it really did happen that more people dreamt. By the end of the week, everybody was coming to me and telling me, hey, I had this dream, and what does this mean? And I can't ever tell you exactly what it means, but I can help you discover what it means for you. In other words, the touchstone is it meaningful to you? And so I urge you all very much to keep a running account of your dreams if you want to, and certainly for next Wednesday it would be fun for those of you who have had dreams to bring them in and for us to actually look at them specifically. Now, I can go on talking for hours and hours about this, but I'd like some questions because this is for you and where you're at. Yes?
Can you ever have a misinterpret your dream? Then you said like a dream could mean whatever it meant to you. That's how you derive the meaning from the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible? Does that make it impossible to misinterpret?
No, I don't think it does. It happens that we get off on the wrong track, and especially if the person who is doing the interpreting has some very strong ideas about what the dream should mean, see? And so, here's an example. I had a dream about some camels, and I told it to somebody. They had some very negative feelings about the camels. And they got off on what camels mean. And before I knew it, I was in some desert country, and all this didn't fit. Then we talked some more, and there was something about the camels not going without water for a long time. That had more meaning for me. So it is possible to get off on the wrong track. That's why we check it out to see how you do it. It usually regulates itself, you see, because you talk back and forth.
Well, I would say the Bible is, again, excellent guide there. For every good interpretation you find in the Bible, there's about 20 warnings of wrong interpreters, and whether done by oneself or the wise people of the kingdom who interpret. Says beware of those who are bad interpreters in the Old Testament and so forth.
And one warning is that the dreams, thank you, dreams do not foretell the future, literally, even though they may point to what you will do in the future, because they are without time. They are not prophetic and should not be used that way. But they do act as warnings that you might be going in the wrong direction, or that you are to do a certain Pass.
Well, wouldn't you say Joseph's dreams were prophetic?
Well, these people were very special people, and they also communed with angels in their waking life, it seems like, so that in a sense...
And that was God's way of...
Yes, God's way of speaking to him directly, yes. But I think for most of us who don't speak with angels every day, we just look at dreams for what they're telling us about our unconscious. Yeah?
It seems to me that sometimes I have more of a tendency to forget a dream that seems to have a lot of significance that I might not want to face.
Mm-hmm.
Is that yourself?
I think so, because most of them are scary and have scary elements in them. And I have found myself saying, oh, I really don't want to write this one down. This one isn't one of those nice dreams of walking out in the sunshine up on the lovely mountainside. This one is more scary, and I tend to forget it, but probably it would be a good thing to look at it. According to Jung, the self has a way of reminding you over and over. So if you forget it once, it will come back in another way. And I could say for myself that over the years I've had a series of dreams that have told me in one way or another that this is happening. And so forgetting one isn't too bad. But, yeah.
When you dream, is absolutely everything that you repress normally for you for the taking, or can you repress things so thoroughly that you don't even dream about them?
Well, that's a good question. I'd say by and large most of the repressed material comes up, but it may be disguised. And the dream is very clever. If it's very painful, you may dream that you're dreaming, or you may dream that you're seeing it in a movie, or you may put the words into somebody else's mouth, or you may completely disguise it and scramble it up, see? But I'd say all the repressed material does come up, but then it's a question of whether you're ready to receive it. A little bit like Norm Nagel said this morning, what do we do with the gift? How do we receive it? Similarly, how do we receive the dream? And this reminds me that I was going to open with the message from the Matins that was so meaningful. She said, the mystery is how things from the outside get inside, and in a dream it's just about the opposite. It's how does the inside get to your consciousness? So. That gave me an interesting tie-in.
What if you remember dreams for years afterwards?
What?
What if you remember dreams years afterwards? Like, I've had some weird, really super weird dreams that I remember.
Uh-huh.
And I've had when I was about 15 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I used to have a lot of nightmares and stuff.
Yeah.
And I always think about skeletons and stuff like that.
I think if you remember them, the message is still valid. In other words, it's important to look at them. And the weirder they are, the more likely you're to remember them, you see. And I said, dreams are bizarre and they're all scrambled up. And so those probably are significant ones. And maybe we can look at them later. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You said that the dreams are a linking from the subconscious to the conscious, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, does one have to consciously think, let's say, for instance, if you're getting a message through a dream, for this message to, you know, become valid or to use it, do you have to consciously think of it, or or can you use it just through dreaming, maybe not remembering it afterwards? Feel that it's only of use if you consciously put it there.
Okay, you're saying it's only...
A message or something.
I see, yeah. Well, the very fact that you remember it means that you're already conscious of it. When you forget it, it remains down there. The moment you remember it, you're already getting the message. So okay. You have to become conscious of it. It's no use if it stays unconscious.
Okay, when you say remember it, are you saying that remembering it consciously, or it's coming through as a dream?
Okay, I don't understand the problem. You remember the dream as a dream.
Okay.
That's good enough.
Okay,
yeah. The next step would be to write it down and to analyze it and say, now there's this symbol. We'll do that in the next few sessions with sample dreams. Well, this symbol means this, could mean this. And go through it. That means that's going deeper into it. And then the third step would be to take it to an analyst who is really trained in it and have him and both of you associate and go really deep and see what it could mean on the deepest level, you see.
Okay, well,
all right, does that answer your question?
Oh, sorry, yeah.
But it still remains a dream. You're aware of it as a dream,
right.
But
okay,
you're
but
thinking about it.
If you don't remember it as a dream, let's say you dream something the next, but you never really remember it the next morning, is it still helpful to you to have dreamt something? No,
it can't be because okay. it remains down there.
I thought maybe as a dream it's still, you know, coming to your...
I see.
Coming through a dream that it may help you in some way. Sorry, I'm wondering.
I think if you don't remember it, it just lost. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is one of the theories of dreaming, that's a way in which information is organized in the subconscious.
Yeah.
For use. You know, they find when people don't sleep for a long, long time, they can get...
Yes, you have a very good point there. Yes.
And one of the hypotheses is that the dreams are not organizing material.
That's a good point. In other words, if you don't dream, like if you take, I think some sleeping pills keep you from dreaming. I'm not sure about that. But if you don't dream over a long period of time, you get disoriented. It has a function of ordering your psyche. But... That's on a level just like your sympathetic nervous system. You're not aware of it. It keeps your body in balance. You're not aware of it. But the purpose, the helpful use of dreams is when you remember them. See, that's on another level. It helps you in your conscious life. All right?
I have a question. What causes nightmares? Is that then, are you dreaming something violent that makes you act it out in your sleep?
Well, I think a nightmare is a very scary dream that's so scary that it wakes you and jolts you back into consciousness. I don't know what causes them. Many theories are that if you overeat the night before, that you're going to have a nightmare. That's quite possible. One other one is... A very common dream is if you're lying on your side and your circulation is cut off, you dream that you're crossing, let's say, a railroad track and the train is coming at you and, you know, you wake up before the train runs you over. Now, that's what I mean by somatic dreams. They're conditioned by your bodily condition more than by your psychic unconscious. But if they wake you, they're so scary for one reason or another that you can't stand to see the end of it. But if you analyze that dream, it's probably just as valid as any other, you see. Might be just really good to look at it.
Speaking of the body, though, it seems to me, as several people have commented about age 15 and so
yeah.
forth, the Germans have a word that I think is so perfect,
oh, yeah.
Hobstarken, which is their word for adolescent, pack strong.
Mm-hmm.
When a person is in that in-between stage from 12 to 15, beginning to grow pubic hair and change a lot and everything, it seems to me that it's almost everybody has frightening dreams in those years because they're in between childhood and adulthood.
Yeah, that's right. In stage, in any transition, you will dream more, and especially in adolescence, there are many anxiety dreams because you're going from one stage to another, and it is really scary when your whole body is changing. And this is reflected in dreams of many dreams, so nightmares and dreams of falling and scary things. Yeah.
Have a little nightmare a lot of times. You cannot wake yourself up. You holler for help, and you think you're hollering for help. You have to push it, and you don't wake up.
Mm-hmm.
My father had one in which he said to my mother, "Wake me up! Get me out of this."
that I don't know.
The first one I ever had was I was laying in the haymow when I was a young fella, and I dreamt about a big black cat coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to wake, I could not wake up. I finally woke up with a jump.
Uh-huh.
But I can remember that as plain as this day.
What is the cat doing?
Well, he's just coming towards me. That's all.
It was really big?
Yeah, pretty good sized one.
Most animals represent, you know, instinctual fear or just the instincts that you can't control. And so if they're, and a cat often can, a big cat can be frightening because they can be dangerous. Or
could you clarify one of the points there?
Yeah.
Did you say that everything in the subconscious is subject to recall? That all the data that's stored there at some point or another can be recalled in a dream? Was that what you said?
Not quite.
Is there a block of information that is absolutely and for all time under and would have to call for the most extreme circumstances to bring it even into the dream realm?
I think so, yes. There is. There are layers. And according to Freud, there's a collective unconscious that we share with all humanity that is on the deepest level, that is very hard to reach. The personal unconscious is mostly what we get in dreams. But in the very significant dreams, we'll get archetypes rising from the deeper levels, and they're often the very significant ones.
So
not everything is subject, not everything will come up.
You meant Jung. Yeah, he said Freud.
Oh my, what a Freudian Jungian slip.
So you did that once before, too.
Yeah, goodness.
But that language, since it's symbolic, we store a lot of information that probably deals with symbols. It would be hard to break the code. Now they're talking about language that, or symbolic experiences in the womb that are not associated with probably more sensory data that has to do with the embryonic fluid and so on, rather than with symbols as we, you know, sight and sound type things. That's what I'm wondering. You know, there's so many of that, those types of symbols that come up in our experience in our dreams, you know, the falling, the being in bodies of water and so on. But I wonder how much of that we have established meanings for from our experience in the sight and sound and our symbols, as opposed to what meaning they might carry if they fall back into this collective unconscious archetypes and so on. And when we interpret a dream, we tend to put a meaning on it that's understandable in our symbolic experience, as opposed to even a universal symbolic that may go back millions of years.
Okay, and you've touched on the very thing that Jung writes about and that I will go into more, namely, what are the archetypes? The archetypes are precisely those predispositions in your unconscious that rise up in the form of symbols in your dream. And it's for you to learn to unlock this, to know what this means, that will then tell you what the unconscious is trying to tell you. We'll deal with that more next time. I don't want to bring in too many things because I don't know where we're all at. Yes?
My question, the original assumption that somehow an integrated person was a better person than a fuller person than somebody who was not in touch with their unconscious, and that in line with all the theory that maybe we're sinful and unclean by nature, maybe we don't want to get in touch with our deeper selves. I'm interested in disagreement against
Well, are you saying then we're basically sinful and can never be integrated and whole?
I'm just questioning the good value of being an integrated person.
I see. Does anybody else want to answer this?
I suppose that you could take kindergarten, first grade, and second grade as a, you know, the first steps towards, well, not first steps, but valuable steps. Mm-hmm. Would you have eliminated, you know, the first 3 years of school and said, you know, maybe learning all that won't make me the whole person that I eventually want to be, but it's a step towards it. I see this as any steps toward better mental health have value. Maybe we won't reach the ultimate goal of having it all together. So
perhaps I could try to answer you in this way, that we never become fully integrated. That's the goal up there. And Norm Nagel said maybe we shouldn't have goals up there. We should stay right where we are. That's another point. But the goal, after all, is to grow. And I think we all feel that we grow physically, and then we also want to grow in ourselves. But it's not an even thing. We grow, and then we go on a plateau, and we go down, we go up. And it's also like a spiral growth. So we have to go over and over the same ground. And we never really reach a point and stay there. Actually, if we got completely integrated, that would be the end. Nobody ever gets there. But it's kind of a goal. And in a sense, you reach a point where you can be more balanced. And I like to use the image of a teeter-totter. In fact, I was going to start with that, and that helped me think of it. And if you stay in your conscious life, it's like sitting on top of the teeter-totter, and the other side is down in the unconscious. Well, when the unconscious comes up with a jolt, you're going to fall in down there and really get hurt yourself. Now, what you learn to do after a while is you balance it, you get somebody else to sit on the other side, and you balance back and forth, and you have a wonderful time. So the teeter-totter image is really good. Integration could be dynamic, like teeter-tottering back and forth, because both sides have to be given their place. And you can't just stay in the conscious, nor can you stay in the unconscious, because you'd lose touch with reality. And that's even worse in some ways.
Can you give an example of a person who benefited from dream analysis?
Well, I come in contact with them all the time, and Jung wrote many, many books about it, and he had many patients, and there are many examples in his books. In fact, if you read the book, you will find many examples. Wednesday, I'll come in with a few specific examples, okay? Right at the moment, I can't think of one.
There is one example, Timken, a Scottish poet that I like, by name of Edwin Muir.
Yeah.
And he had many, many tragedies in his life, and working in the slums of Glasgow, Scotland, and so forth. And he had a Jungian analyst who helped him. That's about the best example I can think of. As a matter of fact, in his autobiography, which I recommend all of you read sometime, he has one of the dreams there. And he and the analyst worked on that dream together, and the assistance from that.
Thank you.
But
that's
again, pretty I know good. Many poets have been analysts where I feel that nothing was accomplished.
Yes, I think that with the prevalence of going to analysts and being analyzed, it can be overdone. That's like sitting on a teeter-totter and looking at your unconscious all the time. And another difference here now between Freud and Jung is that in a Freudian analysis, you have to lie on the couch and tell your dreams and free associate and go five times a week, spend a lot of money, and you really don't have much time to check it out in reality, what you're learning about your inside. In a Jungian analysis, you sit face to face. You come in twice a week, maximum three times a week. And in the interval, you check it out. You check out what you've learned about yourself. And you test it so that you benefit by the insights from your dreams. And you don't just talk about dreams. Dreams are just one of the main helps. But we don't have to go to an analyst or be very disturbed to find dreams both fascinating and entertaining and helpful. That's my main point. They're all three things. They're helpful and useful and entertaining as well. Any other questions? Or?
Does Jung work with sleepwalking?
Not specifically, except that that's kind of an acting out of, I think that's a physiological difficulty. I don't think he deals with that specifically. Yeah?
Can you be awakened while having a dream and then go back to sleep and continue to dream?
Oh, yes. That happens quite often. Sometimes, not quite often. Sometimes. Sometimes. Depends on the person. It's happened to me a couple
times. You wake up, go right back to dream. go back to the same, wake up and go back to the same dream again. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can get out of it is to get up and walk around.
That's right.
Do you agree with Dr. Diamond that that each dream is like a five-act play that goes through your 8 hours of sleep? That there's a beginning and it's like five acts literally, and they last 15 to 45 seconds, each of the acts. And he has an argument for that, and he said that if you wake up, if you're wakened by an alarm in the middle of one of the acts, you tend to be extremely irritable because you have not yet dealt with the information that is there. Whereas if your alarm goes off before you begin, say, the fifth act, then you'll wake up refreshed and will not have the same problem.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, Dr. Diamond, is this?
Yes.
Never heard
University
of
Michigan.
Oh. Well, yes, there is a similarity because he talks about the plot of the dream. He doesn't talk about the waking up part, but he does describe a dream like a play, that it has a plot with the characters that they're introduced, the place, the time and place, then the actual plot, the climax, and then the outcome. And I would think that if you woke up before the outcome, you would want to know what's happening. And I really have to think about that, whether it would make you more irritable or not. But definitely a dream has a... Most dreams have the structure of a plot, unless they're just fragments. And that, again, is a sign of whether it's an important dream. Some dreams are very dramatic, and I think it depends on the kind of person you are and what you do in your conscious life. My husband has most fantastic, elaborate dreams that could make short stories in and of themselves. My dreams are very different, but many of them have plots the way you describe. And then at the end, there's sort of a nice ending. And they're very satisfying when you come to that kind of thing. Yeah.
But they're always very brief, aren't they? A dream is just a few seconds, isn't it?
Yeah, in actual time. Yes. There is no correlation between how long the dream seems and how long you dream. I don't know exactly how long that is, but there is a big difference. Yeah. You had a question.
Yes, why do some people say they don't dream if in fact everybody dreams? I mean, why are they not more conscious of their dreams?
Yes, I've wondered about that, and there are many stretches, and I'll give you some examples of why I think it's so. Let's say you're very balanced and happy in your life, and things are going along pretty well. You probably dream, but there's nothing very important that's coming up out of your unconscious. But let's say you're coming to some crisis in your life, or you're facing an exam, or you're going to get married, or you've just experienced a death in the family. The chances are that you will have more dreams because things are stirred up. And that's probably when you're more likely to remember them. Another thing is that I have looked back, and as I type my dreams, some of them are 11 pages, some are only 2 pages. Now, why did I dream so much more in 1 year and less in another? I haven't found that out yet, but I'll look into it.
One of Freud's Viennese colleagues never had a dream, called a psychoanalyst. Never had a dream. I could picture him becoming an expert on dreams, like there's a minor poet of the 18th century in England who was blind from birth who wrote nature poetry. So I suppose it's like a woman going to the analyst and says, I'm in great trouble, could you loan me a dream?
Yeah. perhaps you would like, are there any other questions? Perhaps you'd like to know a little more about Jung himself. He was a son of a pastor, a long line of pastors. He was born in 1875 in Switzerland, in Küsnacht, which is near Zurich. And his mother was more of a dreamer. I mean, not literally, but a dreamer type. And he had a very warm relationship to her. The father was very stern, and many of you being close to the church know what it means as a pastor, and he had a very dogmatic view of things. He was a Calvinist. And he was very sensitive as a child, introspective, philosophical. He had many dreams that I will talk about next time as he grew up, which were important to him throughout his life. Well, of course, he built his whole theory on this. He did work in the mental hospital, especially with schizophrenics. And he coined the term, which we all know, extrovert and introvert. Next week, that's what I will be talking about. And formulated a theory of types, not just extrovert and introvert, but functions. He coined the term complex, you know, inferiority complex and so forth. All this very term is one that he coined many years ago. And, as I say, wrote many, many books with interest in alchemy and the occult, in dreams, and you see this put him into a different field. He's written the theory of synchronicity, which means happy coincidences. He had great interest in mythology, fairy tales, and traveled quite a bit to Africa, and was very much in touch with his own unconscious, and analyzed how many thousand dreams, Jim?
Well, I guess 100,000.
Something like that. A lot of dreams of his patients. And also did a lot of drawings of what came up in his own unconscious. And in addition, as though that weren't enough, he balanced this academic thing, or this psychological thing, by building a tower in on his property, which is known as the Bollingen Tower. And he built it with his own hands, and he carved the inscriptions in stone, and he found that was the physical work was a great satisfying thing, compensating for all this head work that he was doing, you see. So he was one of the people who was really, really balanced. And I hope you'll go to the bookstore and pick up that book, Man and the Symbols, and you'll learn a little more about him. He wrote the first chapter, and other people wrote the other chapters. The first chapter is Approach to the Unconscious. And we will be dealing with that. Then Ancient Myths by Joseph Henderson. The Process of Individuation, that's the process of becoming whole. Symbols and the Visual Arts, and Symbols and Individual Analysis. And then a concluding chapter, notes and illustrations and so forth. I have the hardcover book, but the paperback has all the same illustrations in it. So I think you might find it useful and bring back questions. It's almost time for supper, isn't it? Anyone who would like to go, I think we'll meet again on Wednesday. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.